Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura? Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to you, too. Did you have a good day?
I did. I said I had a sleepy Mother's Day. It was a busy weekend. First weekend in the, well, we moved last Saturday, so it was kind of the official first weekend in the new house. And Laura, my youngest daughter, had 11 of her college sorority sisters come for Derby. So we did lots of cooking and lots of cleaning up. And we really weren't quite ready, but we muddled through it, and I think they had a good time. But today,
that's so good. Have
I was
they left?
Very tired. Yeah, they all left kind of in between maybe 7 and noon today. So it was, they're very nice girls, but it was kind of like our first weekend in the house. We have house guests. Oh, well, at least they were young and not too particular. So
I was going to say they're college kids. Yeah, they're used to things being totally chaotic.
Let me tell you that. They do eat a lot.
Yes, I have 2 college-age children of my own. I totally get that, yeah.
I even surprised Laura. We had gotten a ton of chips and everything. And the very first night, they were pretty much all gone. We were so, woo, we have to get some more. So
that would be the story of my life. I'm in Kroger a couple times a day,
Yeah, they really were hungry girls. So anyway, it was very fun and nice, but today I was kind of wiped out and tired, so I took full advantage of Mother's Day and slept a lot.
Oh, that's good. We've had a big day because it's not only Mother's Day, but it's Johnny's birthday today. So we've had a double celebration today at our house. And both the mom and the dad have a special day, so we had a really nice meal. And, of course, the kids were very nice with presents, and it was tons of fun. But it has been kind of a relaxing last couple of hours or two, right before we went on, Johnny said, "You need to pep it up a little bit." I guess I've been a little bit too relaxed.
A little low energy, huh? Well.
And we've been off for 2 weeks because last week moving in the house was such a big thing for you. And then I started the show by myself, but then lightning struck. My computer went out, just all kinds of weird things happen, so it just wasn't meant to be. And then we weren't on the week before because of Easter, so we are coming back after a little hiatus. So I hope we haven't lost our listeners, and they're going to just
Then my kids said, "You're doing it on Mother's Day?" I said, "We had a problem. We need to get back in the saddle." So we're back.
I know our kids said that today, too, but I said, we've missed 2 weeks in a row. We've got to get back. And honestly, Kate, I have gotten so many comments, and I've told you this a lot lately in the last couple of months, but every day I get multiple emails about how much people enjoy the podcast, or they might be emailing me about something else, but they say, "I love the show, I love the podcast." So when
now
I start hearing
really
that a lot, too.
That's difficult for me to believe, but it's nice to hear.
That our ramblings might actually...
Sometimes you forward them, so unless you fabricate them totally, I think they're legit. So
they're legit. I would not go to that much trouble. Yeah. Yeah, so anyway. Well, let's say Happy Mother's Day to our listeners who are moms. It is, if you're a parent of a child with delays, boy, is it hard to celebrate sometimes on a day like this when you're thinking, "Oh, I just wanted to talk," or, "Oh my goodness, I have a more difficult road than I envisioned when I was pregnant, and it's not quite like I thought." And I just want to really encourage those moms to hang in there and let those moms know, too, they are their kids' best shot at becoming all that they're supposed to be and accomplishing all that life has for them. So hang in there and keep going, because I know that's really, really tough. And back when Johnny and I ran our playgroup program in Louisville, on Mother's Day, I would, we would make things, and I would always write a little poem like it's to the mom from the kid. And mothers would just stand in the office and cry and just say, "If I could just hear him say, 'Mama,' or if I could just hear him say, 'I love you,' or if I would know that next Mother's Day he would be talking, maybe this day would be a little easier for me." But I think Mother's Day conjures up all kinds of emotional implications when you're worried about your child. So if that happens to be your situation, Kate and I are totally empathetic and supportive and want to do everything we can to help you with your challenges of raising a kid that you're worried about. So I want to just kind of put that out there. Well, we also have lots of listeners that are therapists, and tonight we have three questions from therapists that have either, I'm not sure they've all, I think two of them have called the show, and one of them I've emailed back and forth for a long time. I don't think she's ever called the show, but these are all therapist-based questions tonight. But if you are listening live and have another question or a question you'd rather ask on the air, let's give a call-in number because we have not had a live caller in a while, and we would be more than happy just to chunk the plan for the night and take your question if somebody wants to call in. So the number is 1-718-766-4332. And if we don't have any callers, we're going to proceed with these three questions that we have. Wait, have I made my other announcements yet? I think I've forgotten to do
no,
that, too.
No, you have not.
The Tennessee dates are coming up. I cannot believe it's already May. Can you? I think this year is flying, but maybe not
Laura,
for you.
It goes faster and faster.
I know it does go faster and faster. And I guess this year, because you were so, you know, the full every day anticipating moving into the dream house, and now that dream has come true, you probably realize that it's May. But every month when I flip the calendar, I think, no way, no way can it be this far into the year already. So I've planned these Tennessee dates for a long time, and so it's just amazing to me that they are next week. And it just still seems like a far away when I say May 18th, 19th, and 20th, I'm going to be in Tennessee. First in Chattanooga on the 18th, then Knoxville on the 19th, then Nashville on the 20th. So if you are in Tennessee and want to come spend the day having a ton of fun talking about working with toddlers with communication delays, I'd love to have you. And you can get more information about that and register on my website at teachmetotalk.com. So that's that. The second big announcement is that new book is shipping May 16th, and that's next Monday. I cannot believe that that project is finally over. It's a little bit like your house, Kate. You know, it just drug on and on and on.
Yeah,
you can't really say anything. You know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not quite the same, but just the project that you worked on for a long time.
Eventually you get through them. That's the good news. You've gotten through it. That's a huge, huge event, Laura. Congratulations.
Thank you. But I'm very happy about it, but I am excited that it will finally ship. I was looking at a copy today, and I'm so pleased with it and glad that I reworked it all those different times. But there's still a chance for anyone who would want to email me for the special secret coupon code for the pre-sale. And the reason that I don't give that out over the podcast or publish it on the website is because sometimes people will try to use the coupon code that's like a year or a year and a half old, and they get really mad when that code doesn't work. So I've decided now that I'm going to start not talking about the codes or anything, that they can email me or find it on the website, so that it's not a code that's invalid, so that we'll minimize people maybe getting a little bit frustrated with me. But you can still get the pre-sale discount coupon code by emailing me at Laura@TeachMeToTalk. The pre-sale ends next Sunday, May 15th, so you have one more week to get the discount, and it's a $14 discount, so it's pretty hefty. And, Kate, you were such a saver that I would think, even you would think, that's a pretty big sale.
Absolutely. That would be enough incentive probably for me, because if it's not a bargain, I'm usually not interested. But
I know, and it will never be this cheap again, because I did everything I could to be able to offer it this low before it bumps back up to the regular price. So one more week to get that in, and I've sold quite a few of those in the pre-sale, so I'm really excited about that. Again, it's so nice to come to the end of a project and see it in black and white when you've looked at it on a computer screen or notes spread out all over your living room for months and months and months. So I am very excited that that will happen next week.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Do you have anything you want to say before we dive right into these questions?
Not really. Nope.
Okay, well, let's get going then. This is kind of a continuation of the topic that we started 3 weeks ago, and the title of that show was Toddlers Who Blow You Off, but we never quite got to the question, you know, imagine that the show was titled for. And these are kind of, these are three questions that are related to that for what happens when you're trying to get a kid to do something or present a play routine when you have a particular goal in mind and he is not interested and he is just, for whatever reason, blowing you off. And as therapists, we've all been there, unfortunately. And that feeling that you have, like, what am I going to do now? That was my best trick. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about three different scenarios that therapists have written in. And I think at least one of these people asked to be anonymous. So I'm just not going to read anybody's name on these because I can't remember who it was that said, don't say my name. So I'm just not going to do it. So let's start with this one. She says, I have another case which is challenging for me. It's a little boy who's not yet two. She said he turns two this summer. She doesn't remember the exact birthday. He's an avid signer, good social skills, play skills, good receptive language. Mom is very involved and appropriate. So this little guy's figured out when the speech games are going to start, and he shuts down immediately. By that, I mean he wanders off. It's a typical middle-class home with toys and things, so there's plenty for him to do other than what I bring along. I asked Mom today if he does this with her, and she said that he does. Here's an example. And she'll offer, does he want to play with bells or bubbles? And she said that they've had, and I think by bells, she means jingle bells. And I know this is a therapist that has really watched and asked me lots of questions about the Apraxia DVD. And Katie, if you'll remember, in that DVD, I do a bunch with jingle bells, with singing with my little redheaded friend, Max.
Right.
So I think this therapist uses a lot of those specific activities from that DVD. And she says, we've had luck getting him to say hey at the end of singing jingle bells several times. He loves the bubbles, of course, but he's figured out that if we have the bubbles, we are going to blow them only when he does something, meaning that he signs or he says something like more. So he'll pick the bubbles. Then he wants to hold the bubbles. He does not want me or Mom to blow them, even though he cannot blow them himself, but he hangs on to them and tries over and over and over. Have you seen that a time or two, Kate?
Absolutely.
She said, if we somehow get hold of the bubbles and stand up out of his reach, he shuts down. He doesn't care about them anymore. He wanders off. We can be hooting and hollering, pop, 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 and it does not matter. She says, signing more is very easy for him. He can do two signs at once if he wants, like more and please. He can also say more. She said, this is the same behavior we see for any activity, even the ones he loves the most, like the Elmo Jack in the Box, the ball and the ramp toy, etc. If there's a contingency placed on it, he is done. She says, I try to keep it as fun and as upbeat as possible, following your great advice, but she questions, maybe I'm not fun enough. I'm not sure how I can be more fun. Mm-hmm. He seems to have figured out the deal more so than other kids who will stand there and sign more for bubbles forever if you let them. But he sees those bubbles, and he's like, I am not doing anything to get those. She said, the only exception today is that he finally signed for cookies and fish during snack time several times, but only after much prompting. Then she says, fish is a sign that he spontaneously does and does often, Mom says. She said, I guess the temptation in this case finally overcame his stubbornness. She said, he held out for a long time. How can I overcome this? It seems like we already have a battle of the will set up. I've only seen him for a month. And then she asked, perhaps Mom is pushing too much when I'm not there, or maybe we are not pushing him enough. So she's at a real loss to do, and he would definitely be a kid that you could describe as a toddler who blows her off when he thinks that he's going to have to respond in order to get to do something and set that up. And this is a really common scenario in therapy, don't you think, Kate?
Absolutely, particularly for kids this age, that's not quite
right.
Too, you know, that's not necessarily all, I mean, for some kids it's not a difficult time, but for a fair number of kids, they seem to be kind of at this stage where they're beginning to figure out, I'm the master of my own universe, and if I don't want
right.
to do it, I'm not going to do it, and that's really what they mean. So, yeah.
Yeah.
He may be a different kid in a couple months.
Yeah, he really might be. And I do think that 21 to 24-month period is notoriously difficult, and that is when you read back with all the kind of developmental literature, that's why people started calling it terrible twos. It's that independence that a lot of children cognitively kind of socially get to right before they're two, but it's tougher for this little guy because he can't really verbally negotiate anything yet. And like toddlers with typically developing language, because when most kids are this age and turning two, they're popping out a lot of words and using two-word phrases frequently, and so they're able to verbally express what they want, and it seems like this little guy's big strategy is walk away and just totally move on. Just find something else. And so it does create the situation where she's thinking, okay, what do I do in this case? Do I still keep kind of pushing to get him to come back? Do I just hold my ground here and kind of make him do it, for lack of a better word? And, you know, with to that I always say, when can we really – you can't really make a kid talk. Yes, we can make them sign, which is one reason I like signs so much, because you can take those little hands and make them do it. But at the same time, he still has to want to play and want it. It has to be fun enough for it to be motivating enough for him to overcome whatever little obstacle there's been there. I think it was really telling at the end of her question when she said that today he finally signed for cookie and fish. And so in my mind, it would be that she really has yet to find things that are quite as powerful to motivate him as she probably needs to find for therapy. And it does sound like she's gotten some things that we would consider to be winners as far as toys and activities. And it does say that she's trying to be really playful when she's doing it. But in my mind, I can still, when I'm reading through this, I still think that motivation is probably an issue there, and that she's just going to have to look for things that he absolutely loves so that it entices him to want to stay and play with her, and so that it overcomes any kind of internal, that's just not worth it, whatever, I'm moving on, feeling that he might have there. So I think she needs to really analyze what his motivators are that she's using to kind of to play with him. My other thought with this would be, it sounds like he's got too much kind of free rein about being able to kind of just walk away and get away. And we've talked about this a lot in the last few months on the show, haven't we, Kate, about how important the environment is as far as where you see a kid and when you work with him. Because if he has the opportunity to just kind of turn and walk away, or to run out of the room, or if you're working in a room that has, you know, that's a really big open floor plan, you almost don't have a prayer if you don't have something that he really, really likes, because he's just going to move on. So she might try to change the environment a little bit, like we talked about with a therapist that called. When did Brooke call? 6 weeks ago, maybe, how we talked about really using the furniture or some other physical arrangement so that she could corner him a little bit and keep him in a place where he didn't walk off quite as much. So that's another thing that I would suggest, is that she really figure out a place to play with him where he's not going to have quite as much opportunity to blow her off by leaving the space. And I don't like to be locked away in a bedroom with a kid or anything, but sometimes those big open floor plans present more of a problem than when you can get a kid kind of cornered off in a smaller room.
Right. And I know, Laura, we said before, but just for people who haven't listened to us drone on about it in the past, we don't mean that you're locking them in or you're forcing them to stay, but just sometimes having some walls between, behind the child. And if the child really decides they're out of there, they're out of there. But it just seems like a lot of kids that we work with, you know, attention can be a problem. Focus isn't necessarily a strength. And I call them, in fact, wanderers, in a loving way, of course, but they spend lots of their day wandering. And a lot of times when you ask parents, well, what does he like to do all day? Well, they really kind of say he really kind of wanders around the house all day.
Yeah.
So, and that's
roamers.
What they mean.
Yeah.
Right. I call them wanderers. You call them roamers. But parents do recognize that, well, you know, he kind of has a few things he likes toys-wise, but generally he's walking around the house, maybe following mom, maybe not, but he's wandering
right.
and wandering. And those kids, do that is kind of their go-to instinct if they're pressed or challenged or if they feel at all, oh, I don't know.
Put on the spot, confronted. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very quick to go. And just even if you do, in fact, allow them to go when they're determined to go, just having some kind of a defined space, whether that be a corner or a hallway or a big closet. I've worked in little closets. And it's interesting because a lot of times those kids, they're really not fighting you to get away when you've defined the space a little bit. It's just like it kind of calms them down. It kind of shuts off that I've got to go, I've got to wander instinct.
Right.
And they'll stay with. And even if they do, they might go leave you once or twice versus, 20 or 30 times in an hour.
Yeah.
And it's called I'm chasing you, you know, therapy.
Yeah. And then sometimes that becomes the game, and that's more fun than what you're doing because they're really kind of seeking out that movement stuff. It doesn't really sound like that could be it doesn't sound like that's all of the situation here.
No.
It sounds like he mostly is like, not good enough
not
for me to want to try. Yeah.
Right.
And so I would really take a look at what her toys are, what her motivators are, you know, and it is interesting that at the top of the page she says he's an avid signer, but then at the bottom she's saying she finally got him to sign cookie and fish. So to me, I wouldn't classify anybody an avid signer unless they were using lots and lots of signs. I wonder if she means that he just uses a couple of signs over and over. I mean, did you notice that, Kate? Do you think that sounds like a teeny bit of a contradiction there?
I kind of know, yes. She, it sounds like he does more when he wants. I mean, because then she kind of goes on and says he signs more easily or on command or when he chooses to or consistent, whatever the wording might be. It implies that more. Yeah, an avid signer, I would say, is a kid who uses a lot of signs and uses them pretty willingly. And it sounds like he has a couple that he chooses to use on occasion.
Right. And so what I would do in that situation then, and she says that he can say more, but I would certainly keep using the signs and really increase the number of signs that he uses. And it could, I'm not sure when he's, I guess he's not, if he uses more signs, he probably doesn't do it in the context of requesting, which I think is a little unusual, because usually there's an interesting kind of buzz going on. What is that? Okay. Usually there's, that's how we teach signs in the context of requesting. So I'm wondering when he uses his signs, if it's not to request. Did you kind of notice that in that question as well, Kate? I wonder if he's just a kid that's a labeler versus one that would use a sign to request.
Okay.
So I'm not.
Well, it sounds to me
sure.
like maybe he uses more with mom a lot, but not necessarily with her a lot. That's
with her,
kind of what I read into it, but.
Yeah. So I would keep pushing new signs with better activities and toys and even snacks. If he doesn't seem to like what you've brought, take new snacks next time. It's so funny how sometimes just changing something like what you're asking them to sign or talk for makes a really big, big difference, especially with kids who are kind of in this, I don't want to say negative phase. They're just more independent. They're deciding, I can decide what I will do and won't do because I'm a totally separate person from you with my own mind and my own will, and I'm choosing to exert it over you right now. So for him, you know, you just have to keep kind of bumping it up and looking for new things to introduce and new things to use and for things that will make him want to participate a little bit better. The other thing that I would suggest that she do is establish a ton of verbal routines. And I talk about this a lot in the new
therapy manual. And it's so important that you, and Kate, you talk about your own play routines, how you say the same things at the same times with the same toys so that children start to expect what you're going to say. And I think we all use this as parents and as therapists when we use a phrase like ready, set, and the kid just kind of pops out, go, because you've said it, you know, 1,001 times before he started to say it. But he almost, you know, it becomes a routine. It becomes familiar. It's expected. And for a kid like this who really has a difficult time with confrontational and with, you know, approaches, or when you start to withhold and he balks a little bit, verbal routines can really save you, because they'll start to kind of pop out those words or kind of do those signs in the context of your routines when there's not necessarily pressure involved. And for those kids, you just have to model those verbal routines until they sort of start to get it. And again, you're not forcing them. You're not making them say it. They just start to say their little words and, again, use their sign, because it's expected as part of what you do. And you're saying and signing those little target words too. It's not like you're putting them completely on the spot. So I think verbal routines are huge for kids like this. And that certainly is for any kid that's developmentally under 24 months. That's almost what you have to rely on more than anything, is establishing those expected words that they're going to say through lots of repetition in your therapy, and lots of, you know, again, really focused modeling of those words, because you can't really make them do it. And so you have to rely on things like that. And I think that's what we use. I mean, we've had this question before. Does your therapy look a little different with kids that are under 2 versus over 2? And sometimes that's a great big yes, because you can hold out a little bit with a 30-month-old or a 34-month-old who's been with you a little while versus a 21-month-old that barely knows you.
Right.
You know, there's a big developmental difference there, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I do think, well, you know, who knows what's going on with this individual child, but it's like, maybe he's apraxic, maybe,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. But if he hears it and hears it and hears it and hears it, and it does become, those are the kids that do eventually start to pop out the words you're targeting, and sometimes the pressure you're putting on them at that age, if you're doing the direct, I'm going to withhold it, I'm going to model it, but you have to give me something back, can kind of shut them down. So you kind of have to, you know, reassess and think, okay, I'm going to model more and eat and done and go so many times that finally his little brain gets it and he begins to spit it out for you. But anyway.
Yeah, you have to really make it automatic. And so verbal routines are a big part of that. And again, not to constantly harp about the book, but if you're not quite sure how to do that, I've got a really good tool in about a week.
That
will walk you through those instructions. Yeah.
Right. And I don't want to say anything negative about the professional speech therapist, but I do see a lot of times, and maybe more than you do, you get the emails from them and wonder if this could be the case. But since I share kids sometimes with speech therapists, I see it in real life, and the kind of things I've had parents say to me, and sometimes I think they recognize what they're saying and sometimes they don't, but they say things like, all the little words he's picked up are the ones that you use with them, not the speech therapist. And I think that's because I have learned your routines, your verbal routines, your social games, I mean, some of mine are unique to me, but some of them are directly
right.
The ones I pirated from you over the years. And
as I have from you and tried to give you credit, yeah.
Well, I know, but you have been my mentor, so... certainly you've had a big influence on me, and I think some speech therapists do those and some don't. And for the ones, you know, the others, they kind of target maybe something more specific to what they're doing that day, or they spend more time trying to determine what it might be that the child is interested in and following the child. And I'm not saying we don't follow the child's lead, but I don't know. Sometimes I think some therapists take that to the extreme and there isn't any real cohesion or any real targeted focus about what, you know, we kind of go in with, these are the words we're going to target. Now, that's not to say we might be encouraged to do something else because that specific child gives us a reason to switch up our game plan, but generally speaking, we know whether we're playing with choo-choo trains or bubbles or cars or balloons or whatever, puzzles, you know, early on, we're going to be pushing more. We're going to be pushing please. We're going to be pushing go. And those words work for just about every activity. So, and I don't know that all therapists do that, and I think that's a huge missed opportunity. And so instead of getting the same, and we encourage, of course, the parents to do the same thing. So it's not just hours in the week. It's you know, I encourage, and I know you do, work those words into almost every darn thing you do so that a kid hears those words all day long. And you think, yeah, you can pretty much work those words into most activities that you engage a the 1-year-old in or a 2-year-old in or a 3-year-old in. So, and I don't know that that's universally recognized as hugely
important.
Well,
it should be. It's hugely important, and there are, this isn't just kind of an idea that I dreamed up one day. You know, this is based on what other people have told us works. Dr. Rossetti, who is the author of the Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale, which any speech pathologist who's worked more than about a day knows what that test is. It's the most widely used criterion referenced assessment throughout the world for children birth to three programs, and it really looks at all facets of communication. And one thing that Dr. Rossetti says in his great introductory book, you know, Communication in Birth to Three, is he talks about teaching parents to establish verbal routines, meaning that they say the same things over and over and over in a baby's life, so that the baby, one, recognizes that they're talking, two, starts to understand those words, and then three, starts to be able to pop those words out. So, again, that's just kind of language therapy 101 that you
should
think about.
But it's strange that it's not more universally applied in the trenches,
well,
working with babies or very young children by therapists, to me.
And that's a problem because a lot of therapists know a lot of theory, but they don't know how to get it to the floor, you know, which I talk about all the time in the conference. That's the name of my conference, you know, Early Speech Language Development, Taking Theory to the Floor, because they have all that knowledge. I know that they know it. They just don't know how it's supposed to look on the floor. Other experts, like you mentioned that little guy sounds like he might be apraxic. Other experts that work in apraxia, say David Hammer, whom we both heard talk and think is fabulous, Nancy Kaufman, who's a big apraxia expert, they talk about establishing a core vocabulary. So what is that? Those are words that you're going to use over and over and over that work in lots of daily routines and things that kids can use to be very communicative, regardless of whether they're taking a bath or getting a snack or playing outside or whatever. And so, again, that's just kind of step one to good language therapy, is picking early targets for a kid's vocabulary so that they are highly functional and really familiar and really easy to pronounce. So, again, I believe what you're saying about you see this happen all the time where people aren't focused enough and specific enough. But, again, I think the issue can't be that the therapist doesn't know the information, because
the implementation,
the application,
part of that. Again, this is just me thinking about what I see in the real world with you know when I share kids with speech therapists. A lot of times they don't really make it fun enough or engaging enough or playful enough, and so just as this child's wandering off, and I guess you kind of alluded to this, or maybe in fact said it, but she doesn't really have this kid yet. In my lay terms, he's not convinced she's the most fun person in the world, and what he's perceiving is the pressure that she's putting on him. And I think sometimes it depends on the child. Sometimes you can hit the door and hit the floor and put that pressure on them, and they take it just fine, and they get it, and they're with you, and you think, wow, this is going to be easy. And other kids, you spend a month or two or three convincing the kid that you are really fun, and they do want to spend their time with you. And if you haven't established that, you're going to get what she's getting. Forget it. You're not worth it. That's what he's telling her. It's not worth it to me.
Right. You haven't found either the toy is not good enough, the snack is not good enough, or, you know, dare I say it, you aren't good enough, you know, with making me want to stay and play. So she's got to really look at kind of that whole thing. The other thing is she really might be asking him to do things that aren't, that are too hard. She might be going one or two steps kind of up the developmental ladder. Like if she's always pushing for a word when he's not very vocal any other times, like if he's not starting to really pop out words on his own. I mean, you don't ever cue, I know you don't, Kate, a word that, I mean, you might cue the word, but you're not really putting a kid in a confrontational situation and really withholding something when you don't have a pretty good idea that he can say that word, meaning that he's popped it out when you've modeled it. He's imitated you spontaneously, not during withholding, but when you've just really, you know, used whatever word, when you've really modeled it and modeled it and modeled it and he's just said it on his own, you would never withhold in a situation where you didn't have a pretty good idea that the kid was going to be able to do it. And the same thing with signs. You know, we really, if a kid doesn't automatically want what we have and then go ahead and follow through with signing it, when you've done the visual model, well, what do you do next? You reach down and make him do it, right? You know, you help him. And if she hasn't seen that he can physically kind of do the next sign, or that she hasn't heard him try that word, or if he doesn't have a similar sounding word, or if he's not really popping out a lot of words in imitation of her, what she's asked him to do it may be too hard. You know, she may be working on something that's just a little bit unrealistic for him, for where he is developmentally. So that would be another thing that she could look at, is exactly what she's asking him to do. The other thing, and we just remember about this particular person, is, and she's so sweet, she's sent me a lot of questions and emails and has been so much fun to get to know and talk to. But one of the things that she had talked about before is that she really lets kids kind of get stuck with just doing more forever, just doing that same sign for a long, long time. So I think that's hard when you've let more work for 6 or 8 weeks and you haven't bumped it up before then. They do kind of think, well, yeah, this is my line in the sand. I'm not doing anything beyond this. This has worked great for me for 2 months now. I don't understand why you're trying to change the game. And you can't let kids get stuck, you know, in that situation either. And we talked a lot about how you bump that up and what your next new signs need to be. And you might let them sign more for a session, but that next week you're introducing a couple of new signs to get them moving on, because kids do, especially at this age, have a tendency to just want to kind of sit there and get stuck there. So that's another thing that could be going on too. She might have waited a little bit too long.
Although
she started up in the ante.
Back you up there, Laura, because she did say she's seen him a month. So I don't think she's, you know, that may be all she's demanded in a month, but it wasn't too long.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about that. And the other thing, though, that was good is that she did kind of, and I don't like the term wear him down, but he did sign cookies and fish at the end, you know, she said. So she's just got to keep on doing what she's doing and not get too terribly upset about him kind of wanting to leave the room or do whatever. She just needs to keep going and keep making it fun, picking fun toys, and just keep chugging along.
Right, which, as you said, means he really wanted those fish. He found something that worked, and sometimes it is. And I do think in the beginning, and as I said initially, with this age of child, it can be a little bit more difficult. They are, I don't know, it's like they're really connected to their mommies and they're a little standoffish with people they don't know well, and they can be really kind of fiercely independent. They are just figuring out their individual kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a way, I like that in kids when they do have
that. I do, too. And that tells you cognitively he's where he's supposed to be. You know, emotionally, socially, when you're looking at all those other areas, because those are behaviors you would see. But it stinks for this kid because he doesn't have more language to be able to kind of negotiate some of that stuff. So she should just keep doing what she knows will work, which is pushing more signs. Keep at it on trying to be a little bit more fun. Keep looking for different toys, activities that might be more enticing for him that are going to overcome his little initial resistance to wanting to try new things. But she should, you know, she's on the right track, especially since he did cookie and fish. And this email is several weeks old, so I hope that she's hearing this and going, psh, he's moved on from there, no longer a problem.
A new set of things, but
But that's a really common scenario that I get lots and lots of questions about, and it does really happen sometimes for kids in that developmental period and right at the after the first few weeks of therapy. They kind of, you know, want to say, this is going to be not as easy for you as you thought, lady, and have their exert their own little wills there. So anyway, hopefully we've given her some new ideas. All right, let's move on to this one.
Okay.
This one says, as a developmental therapist, okay, this is the one who didn't want to be named. So do you watch Saturday Night Live, Kate? Do you watch that?
Not routinely, no.
There's this, Johnny's laughing because he knows what I'm going to say. There's this skit that they're doing right now where they're imitating like an old talk show, and it's like one of those password or secret word shows, and one of the characters always says the secret word that she's not supposed to say. She's just supposed to be giving clues about it, and that's how I feel about this email. I feel like I'm just going to blurt this therapist's name out anyway. Okay, little side note.
I'll
here.
Try and
okay.
beep when you do.
Oh, my gosh, that was
I'll
funny.
I'll bleep
okay.
it for you.
I wish Johnny could hear what you were saying. He would think that's hysterical. Kate's going to bleep it if I do her name. She's going to go, bleh. Okay. All right. She says, as a developmental therapist, I see a lot of children who have behavior issues. She says, I'm a believer in bringing toys into the home, as I know you are. I feel it gets kids engaged when I come into the home, especially those who do not easily play with others. I have a child on my caseload who becomes attached to my toys and tries to keep me from taking them home. Boy, have I seen that a time or two. And I'm just joking about the time or two. That happens all the time. She says, I know not to bring favorite character toys such as Toy Story that he's really attached to. Sometimes he will still try to keep items such as a train puzzle piece, or he will tantrum when it's taken away. Even though we are not transitioning from one activity to another, he still sometimes wants to take a toy off to play with it by himself. I have brought in some sensory play items which he really enjoys, such as rice and shaving cream. I would like for him to participate in more interactive play, such as songs and finger plays, parachute play, ball play, etc. He is really resistant to those activities, and he will tantrum when they are introduced. He isn't interested in early beginner routines, and she's talking about those little games, and she has that early beginner routines is the name of the first chapter from my therapy manual, Teach Me to Play with You, so she's referring to that. She says he isn't interested in early beginner routines, which don't involve toys, and he turns away from me or attempts to walk into another room in order to avoid them. I'm trying to be really fun and engaging, and Mom tells me he talks more and is more social for me than he is with a speech therapist.
Woohoo! Developmental therapist of the world.
You go, girl! Woo! And she says, I would still like to see some improvement in our sessions. So her question really is, what am I going to do to get him to be more interactive? What should I do when he gets mad and wants to keep my toys? And just, again, these are really common scenarios that we see with the kind of toddler who would prefer to take your cool toy and go and just totally leave you out. And we see this a lot in kids with social interaction problems. I mean, that's kind of one of the hallmarks that, you know, he hasn't learned
to enjoy joint attention. He hasn't learned that it's fun to more fun to play with somebody than it is to go take it and do it by himself. He's probably a kid, Kate, that I would think would have some stimulatory stuff. He probably has some visual stuff, or he probably has some other kinds of little interest there and some preferences. And one of those is, you know, he wants to go do it all by himself and not have somebody else interfere with him doing what he wants to do with the toys. A lot of people do look at this as a behavior issue. I really don't. I really look at it like a sensory issue. Don't you?
I do. I mean, I get why they see it. I try always to look at things in a way that are the most positive and make me understand it and not, you know, and work with it instead of against it. And so I would say, that's probably, I mean, could it be some of both? Of course it could.
Sure.
But if I see it as a sensory issue, I understand it better, and I think I'm more likely to deal with it more effectively than if I see it as a behavior issue. And by gum, he will do it my way, or he won't.
Yeah.
He will not get my toy. So, but I will say this: when I get a kid like this, and like you, Laura, we all, anybody working with 0 to 3 year olds with developmental delays, sees kids just like this. Some of us are blessed with lots of kids just like this. I really am pretty militant about not really letting kids, I'm not going to say never, ever, ever, but I do early on try and establish the idea or the routine that my toys come with me. You know what I mean?
Me too.
I don't let them, and I think a lot of therapists are more flexible about that maybe. I'm not going to say I don't ever, but I try day one. At the same time, I'm trying to keep it so much fun and be, so playful. When they try the old, okay, that's a cool toy, I'll take it and be done with you, I really try not to let that happen, because I've been down that road before, and it's a dangerous precedent as far as what we do. And most kids, I tell parents or whoever happens to be with the child, it may take them a few weeks. It may take them a month or two even to get the idea that it's okay that I come with the toy, but I don't really want to establish the precedent that he can take it and go. Because
then you're going to end up with no toys. And I know you're not just talking about physically leaving the toy at his home.
Right.
But then you end up with absolutely nothing that he will do with you, because that's his, he's one then, as far as, that's where he currently is developmentally. There is no reason then for him to include you ever if you just let him do that with no regard for you.
And there are kids, and sometimes I'll hear it with, the OT or the speech therapist or the physical therapist, whatever, and the mom will say, he doesn't really play with her. He takes it, and they kind of let him. And I'm just saying, but I don't. Like, I feel
not
like.
Miss Kate.
No. I had a mom recently tell me that I was in her kid's face, which I took as a compliment. And I made her kind of explain it a little bit. And she said, you just stay on him. You just really, you're nice, but you don't really take no for an answer. And this is a kid who definitely has some sensory issues, definitely has some social issues. And last week I've probably seen him 2 months or so. And it's been getting a little better. The one thing he can say is no. And he will say, no. For weeks I listened to no.
But it's communicative. He's communicating with you.
It's a little perseverative, too. So when he really means no, he says no. And when he's just telling you, get out of my face, it's no. Anyway, last week I had my breakthrough session with him where he was really with me and really, smiling and twinkly and playful and
so
like,
connected.
Oh, I've worn you down, buddy. We have made it. But that was the mother that told me a few weeks before. I started before the OT, and apparently the OT is very young, and you know, this is a kid he's intimidating.
He's a hard kid, yeah.
He is, because he shuts you down, and he's used to doing that. He's 2.5. He's pretty darn good at it. And
mm-hmm.
from day one, that he wanted my toys. His play isn't so bad, but he didn't want a thing. And it was like, those toys come with me. And I really was, in the nicest way possible, in his face. And he knew pretty quickly, because he's an interesting child. He doesn't seem that cognitively delayed, but receptive language is a big issue, and social and everything else is. But anyway, he got it. And, you know, last week it was like, oh, thank you, we've made it.
We've connected.
But anyway, back to this question. I really.
But he sounds like this little boy,
like,
in that his
like
preference,
this.
Yeah,
absolutely,
his preference would be, I
want
to check out with this,
yeah.
and that does not involve you. Yeah.
Right.
And that's the very reason that you have to keep doing it. I mean, that's why you're there, is to kind of get them over that hump of not being very interested in other people. Otherwise, there's no reason for him to learn how to communicate. There's no reason for him to ever have to use words or use gestures if he's going to be completely left alone in his own little world doing his own little thing. Then he has no reason to learn how to use words and gestures and the other kinds of things that we do to communicate. So those are the kids you really have to kind of push through with, like you were just talking about, that you've done for 2 months, is really keep working to make sure that you're not left out, and that they realize you go with that, and that it's more fun for them ultimately if they let you play too, and that you're in there and part of the routine, not just over doing whatever it is he likes to do with the toy all by himself. So this would be all the more reason that she's got to just keep pushing through and keep looking for things that he likes to do.
And really kind of forcing the, no, this is going to involve me.
Right.
And and as far as the throwing the fits that the toys are going, universally, I can say, yes, I've certainly had those kids. They do come around. They do begin to realize.
They do.
Some kids do cry every darn time you leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just, you know, I think you get become a little, I have anyway, a little bit, I feel a little bad, but it's like, oh, well, he'll be okay. I will say this, a lot of times I try and offer them some kind of treat as I'm going. I might, if I know they love balloons, we'll do balloons last and they get to keep a balloon. But some kids, it's just kind of, you know, they're emotionally sensitive. You know, it doesn't take too much to upset them, and they may cry for a couple minutes when you leave. It's like, oh, well.
I was going to say, that's just the transitioning problem. They're just going to have to get a little more emotional maturity, and the only way that you can do it is just to kind of work through it, and just week after week. And I do the whole treat thing, too. Have snack kind of at the end and let them keep the whole little roll of Smarties or, like
they,
you said,
a
balloon or something like that.
Something, and it's like, normally that tends to work. Some kids still, it's going to be a bit of a problem, but...
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, because I've got another long point to make. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think if she establishes the precedent very early on that the toys do come with her, and I'm playfully very kind of...
persistent.
I'm going to be right there, and I'm going to snatch it, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to be... So he really doesn't have the option to blow you off and take it and go. And he'll get, I don't let that happen.
I just don't let it happen. I mean, I go with them. If they're moving to go over in the corner, I figure out a way to put myself between them and that, you know, if they're looking down, boy, I'm hunching down too and getting my face right there and oohing and ahhing and still continuing to play. They turn their back on me, I'm right in front of them before they can even realize that, oh my gosh, here she is again.
Yes,
ladies,
you know? Yep.
They don't get to go in the other room and stay and play.
Well,
no way. I'm right behind them. Most of the time blocking them before they can get to the door, although 44, I'm a lot less fast than I was in my 20s and 30s doing that. But, you know, you just
luckily
don't let them.
They have short little legs. We can usually keep up with them. And I will say this therapist has the right idea about if
she does.
Yeah, if there's something that some kids love things, certain toys too much, and it probably
right.
is kind of one of those sensory stimmy kind of things. Typically, that
right.
kids that you really have to be somewhat cautious and very aware of what, because if they are so, you want them to love it, but you don't want them to be so obsessive and inspired and intrigued by it that all they really want to do is, you know, roll the choo-choo train on the floor back and forth in front of their face, because those kids,
right.
that's not a good toy to take for him. Not at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe later.
And there are toys that you think, oh, that's not going to work for him because it's really going to set him off too much, whether it
too
be
much.
Kind of an emotional set off, yeah, or that he's getting he goes right into his self-stimmy stuff, so that you're not going to want to do that either at this point in therapy. But she's doing good with looking
right.
at different activities. She's got a good range of things that she's tried on here. She said she's tried to get him to do songs and finger plays. He's not interested. To me, I would think he might be a little aversive to that singing,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, he does sound like he has some sensory things, even though she's not described it, just... knowing kids like this, it could be that. It could be that it's so much language, it doesn't have anything that's visual enough for him, so he doesn't want to do it with that. It's interesting that she said she couldn't get him to do, like, parachute play or ball play. So for that kind of kid, I would immediately think, what about something with more gross motor movement, like jumping on the couch or the bed, or, you know, if he'll sit in your lap to do row row your boat or ring around the rosies or something like that, so that there's kind of a physical part of that too. But it sounds like she's doing a great job with trying lots of different things. And truth be told, she's getting some success that some other professionals on his team aren't getting. So even though she feels like it may not be going super yet.
The mom's already telling her
yeah.
it's going better with you than the speech therapist. And
right.
I know what she means. I mean, it's like, yeah, but this
yeah.
is, and that's what drives her to be a better therapist. I mean, we all
exactly.
have that. Even though I had my breakthrough session last week, I'm hoping this week's better, even still.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
We feel that with you, but sounds like really she's doing a pretty good job. I will say with these kids, if in fact we're right on our hunch that some of this is sensory driven, and I'm guessing the things that he does really like have a big sensory payoff for him, you know,
right.
with those kids, particularly in the beginning, I do take a lot of those sorts of toys. And I certainly
mm-hmm.
know before I ever lay eyes on a kid, just from the initial eval that I'm going to read, ooh, I have an idea of what he's going to like. And I'll have
right.
a lot of those things. So it's not just one, you know.
Right.
Undoubtedly, she's heard us talk about, if she's a listener of our podcast, which
she
of toys.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would take a lot of those things so that he learns quickly, well, she's putting that thing away that I love, but guess what? I love the next thing too. And if you kind of apply the formula of what works, what he loves, she's going to know pretty easily what things he's likely to. It doesn't always work 100%, but it works 85 or 90%.
It certainly does do that. And if you're listening and you're a therapist and you're going, I'm not quite sure what Kate's talking about with that, again, I have a great tool for you next week. Or if you want to go ahead and teach me to talk therapy manual, the whole last couple of chapters are problem solving like that and looking at the different activities that you have and seeing, okay, if he likes these visual kinds of toys, what are some other kinds of activities that he might like? Or if he really likes trains, give me some more ideas to do with the trains, you know, and really kind of looking at all of these issues from a problem-solving perspective, not just saying, well, this is a little boy with behavior problems, or that this is just a little boy who's obsessive about Toy Story. You know, you're still thinking, okay, yeah, that's true, but you've got to still treat this kid, and you've still got to move on. You know, what are some other ideas you can do? Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual, will walk you through some of that. His sensory stuff, and I know that this therapist has my first therapy manual, Teach Me to Play with You, I would start looking at some of those common issues that she's having, like he wants to go over and you know, kind of get his visual information by himself with a toy. There's a whole problem-solving section in the back of that book where you can look at, you know, like line up toys, likes to mouth toys. You can look at all those things that look like behaviors and come up with, you know, there's always five or six different ideas from a sensory treatment perspective to help you cope with those kinds of problems. So again, I know this therapist has that book. So she should look in the back and look through there and see if she can't look at some of these issues from that perspective rather than kind of characterizing them as behaviors. But I would say to her, you know, good job. It sounds like you're making inroads with him. He sounds like a hard kid, but just keep plugging away because she is having some initial success that some other folks on her team aren't getting to have. And I did want to point out, let's see, when we were talking about the, you know, the kid who wants to keep your toys, I've had this happen with just maybe two or three kids that this particular strategy, but when I had kids like that who were just totally flipping out and would not let me get the toy, I almost always would grab one of their very favorite toys and ask them if they wanted to trade, and that works nearly every time. If they're a Thomas Choo Choo kid and they're wanting to keep my toy, but then they think I'm going to take their toy, boy, they'll drop mine in a minute to get theirs back. I don't know if you've ever done that before, Kate, but I'm looking at those little boys' faces right now in my memory and thinking of how they looked when they thought I was going to walk out of the door with their Thomas. You know, oh boy, they wanted to give me that toy back then. And that's kind of, again, I wouldn't do it in a mean way, but just like, oh my goodness, she's got something that's mine. And that is a little more real life consequential to do. And not every kid would understand that. I mean, these were little boys too that I had seen for a while, and they had just kind of gotten routinely where they wanted to grab something, keep something, and cry at the end, like, you know, you can leave with that bag of toys, but it's almost like that they had to keep something. And it was always a situation where one of their other therapists would leave a toy for them to play with. And I just don't do that because for a long time in my career, if I, you know, I saw so many kids, I would end up at the end of the week with no toys if I left a toy every time I went. So I just have never been one to do that. I mean, not, like you said, not ever, but most of the time, I keep every toy and I leave with every toy, and we're going to play together with every toy, because to set a precedence to do otherwise, you're just setting yourself up for failure and for lots of difficulty.
I used to do that early on, Laura, years ago, where I'd feel sorry and I'd say, oh, just I'll get it next week. And I don't do it anymore. I used to, some kids, sometimes the parents misinterpreted and they thought I gave it to them, and then I'd have to give it to them, or sometimes you'd go and they lost it. And
yeah, it
sounds kind of cold, but I'm with you. Our toys are our tools of the trade, and
yeah,
our kind of certain things in particular, it's like, no way, because they'll lose a piece, so it'll be broken, or it'll be,
yeah,
you know, whatever. I just kind of feel like they're going to have to learn, and really they do. I mean, I don't have any kids that for months and months and months and months, it's a problem. Typically, it's a couple weeks. The younger they are,
right,
it might last a little longer. But almost universally, they get it. You know, it's just,
well,
just
and I love your idea. You're going
to
leave something with them, whether it be the whole bag of fruit snacks, and they think that is such a treat. If you have never, if during therapy you have letting, you know, you've let them get just one little, you know, I don't even give out a whole fruit snack. Boy, I'm ripping it in half or breaking a mini Teddy Graham. You're going to work for every crumb. So when they get to keep the whole little roll of Smarties or the whole little baby pack of Skittles or M&Ms, that's their treat. Or like you said, a balloon or, you know, something little like that, then they do feel like they've kind of won and gotten, or a sucker,
right,
you know, whatever their little treat seems to be. And for those kids, those things really work pretty well for, too.
Stack of chips, you know, some I've had,
yeah,
thanks to you, I've developed a lot of chip kids lately because I used to not use them, but then I do now, and they'll, oh boy, if you'll give them five or six stacks, you know, woohoo, that's really good. And I wouldn't do
or
that during a session.
Or you tell them to go get a bowl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or tell them you can go get a bowl.
Kids.
Yeah. Go get a bowl and Well, I'll pour you some in here, and then you can pack up your toys and run out the door.
And I do that with a fair number of kids, and they love it. It's very kind of functional. It gets them moving. It gets me moving. They understand this is the end. They're excited about it. They really let go of the idea of you're taking your toys, you're hurting my feelings, or I'm upset. And they're thrilled to get their little bowl, and it's a good closing thing.
I think it's a good little routine, too. I haven't had anybody that I've had to do that for in a while, but, boy, I've had a lot of kids that I have done it for. And it does work. And then you don't feel like you're leaving them completely empty-handed and they're not crying at the door and all that stuff. So those are some good ideas. All right, we did not get to this one question that we're going to lead with next week, and it's a speech therapist who can't really get much sound variability from a kid, and she can't really get him to imitate anything. So next week our show is going to be how to teach a kid to verbally imitate. We're going to walk through those steps. That's something we talk about in my conferences, and it's in the new book too. So next week we're going to walk through that whole process, and so that'll be a fun question to tackle. And again, it's one of those common scenarios that it kind of looks like the toddler's blowing you off, but most of the time there's more than meets the eye there, so you've really got to kind of dig and figure out what the real problem is. It's hardly ever behavior. It's usually associated with what we talked about tonight. There's a social disconnect that's missing. You don't have powerful enough motivators. You've asked them to do something that's too difficult for them to do. You let them kind of get stuck in a routine that you should have ended weeks before, and then it wouldn't have been a problem. You know, all these little things. So we want to, as therapists and as professionals, look at what we can do therapeutically and clinically to tackle all of those issues. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. We made it through another show.
We did, on Mother's Day, no less.
There you go. All right. Well, I hope our listeners will join us next week, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Sounds good. Bye.